Could you be seated, please? Welcome, everyone. This is the plenary session. We're told in an active economy for ours, we'll introduce ourselves. So I'm Tim Brooks, the chair of the Copyright Committee. And one of ARSC's major initiatives, as many of you know, some of you may not, is dealing with copyright on behalf of ARSC for the specific purpose of enabling preservation and access to historic recordings. Preservation, access, remember those two. They are guiding stars. And many of you have contributed to the fund that supports this annually. We appreciate that very much. I just want to give you a brief update on where things stand right now and then open the floor to any questions you might have. First of all, there's more going on in Washington right now on copyright than has been true in the last 20 years. There is a major push underway to update the copyright laws, as you might expect, since the last major update was in the 90s, before the internet became universal and before much of what we now know as the digital world was here. So there is a real push behind this. Chief behind this move are the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, one of the most powerful politicians in Washington, Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, who has held 20 hearings in the last 2 years on this, listening to the stakeholders in different parts of copyright, what they need, what they can put up with, brokering compromises and so forth. And the relatively new Register of Copyright, Maria Polente, who has dedicated her administration to what she calls the next great Copyright Act, and is working hand in glove with Chairman Goodlatte on copyright reform. So there's a lot going on, a lot of activity. In February, we went down to Washington to make the rounds, talk to key decision makers in this. We haven't been down there in about 4 or 5 years. And to find out what was really going on and to make sure that ARSC and its preservation and access goals were not lost in all the jockeying by different groups to get their piece of the pie. No one else in this is fighting for historical recordings. Even the library community is mostly interested in books and publishing and digitizing books and that sort of thing. And so we have a very specific agenda item, which is not duplicated much with others. Obviously, the rights holders and the record industry aren't going to talk up academic access. We met with government officials, people on the Hill, a number of attorneys who are very active in this. You can read all about it in the last ARSC newsletter I described there. Sam Berlofsky, who you'll hear from in a minute, the past president of ARSC, and Alex McGee, a member of the Copyright Committee, attended several of these meetings as well. I can go into more detail in the Q&A if you want, but we were there to make our case, to test the waters, and to leave behind materials on what we were after and why and how that might be done. I would say that we generally had a generally positive reception. You always get different voices from different areas, but for two reasons. Because we're there to bring up a subject that nobody else is bringing up, we bring a unique aspect of this that a lot of them don't know about. And secondly, we're not there as somebody who has a financial interest and is trying to line their own pockets, which many, many, if not most of the stakeholders are there to benefit themselves financially. Whether it's the artists, the record labels, whoever it is, the photographers, all these people, they're looking out for their piece of the pie very transparently. And so they hear from all these people, no, it's mine, no, it's mine. And we come and we're not there to make money, we're there to in the public interest. So that gives a certain amount of credibility as well. We met, as I say, with quite a few different people, including the chief counsels for the minority and the majority on the House Intellectual Property Committee of the Judiciary. What we learned was that, as you might expect with all of this activity, it does look like changes are coming. when, possibly this year, 2015 or even 2016, which I always thought would be unlikely because it's election year. However, because this is a technical change to in many regards, and because so much groundwork has been done, there's a general feeling that there are changes are coming. You better get on the train or make sure the train doesn't run over you. They will probably come piecemeal. There will not be one great new copyright act. There will be a series of bills introduced. Again, with a lot of groundwork having been laid for that already. So we're going to keep our issues in front of them and make sure, hopefully, that we don't get the short end of this. One of our major objectives, for starters, is to make sure the pre-1972 recordings, which for historical accident reasons are now under state law, various state laws in lots of different states and lots of different ways, are brought all together under federal law. So that you've got the library exceptions, you have fair use, you have a public domain for the old ones, and so forth. And that was off the table when we started, six years ago. And now it's on the table and is generally felt to be likely. We're also looking for any opportunities there might be to fund another study that would add to this debate and help support our case. We worked on a study, Steve Smolian and I, some years ago on the number of issues that are put out of older recordings by rights holders when they continue holding these rights for a long period of time. And you can wave your arms till the sky turns gray about how nobody is reissuing stuff. And the other side will says, "But yeah, but it's valuable, and we got to hold on to it, and nothing happens." Or you can put out anecdotes, and they have anecdotes. But when you actually put data on the table, when you do a rigorous, buttoned-up study and say 20%, 15%, as you get older, 10%, 1%, these are the percentages by decade as you go into older recordings that the rights holders do. That opens eyes much more than anecdotes and extreme cases and hand waving can ever do. So that's been an effective study. It's quoted all over the place. There could be some other studies done. An economic study would be very interesting, for example. How much money really would be given up by a public domain, for example? Dollars and cents. What are you really talking about here? We think that would show how it's de minimis, essentially. What about the value of having some free recordings out there in feeding a small range of small labels, which would then issue these things on small margins or just for passion, like they do in England, for example. It's a good model over there. Congressmen like small business and things that feed that, employ people and small businesses which can grow, provide jobs. A study of the British reissue industry might feed that. So that kind of thing and suggestions you may have, please bring them forward. So that in brief and in quick is what's going on down there. If it gets to the point that a bill, when it gets to the point that a bill is introduced, we may well need to call on you to contact your congressman, shoot off an email or a letter, or better yet, even buttonhole him or her. That kind of constituent input is very powerful, but it needs to be at the time when there's actually a bill out there. And to that end, please make sure that Nathan Georgiadis has your current email address. I know that's something you're reminded of from time to time, but as it changes and so forth, please let ARSC know how they can reach you. A couple of other issues that are being worked on right now that the Copyright Committee is working on behalf of ARSC. There's a lawsuit that's grinding its way through the court, a number of them actually, by recording artists of the 1960s who want to have payment for play of their recordings, their 1960s recordings, over the internet. Now, artists from the 70s and 80s and forward get that because that's part of federal law. But if your recording was made before that 1972 cliff, you don't get anything. We have long acknowledged that. We have no problem with that, actually. But it's a bargaining chip. It's saying that the to the record industry, if you'll agree to federalize pre-72 recordings, we get things. We get a public domain. We get library exceptions. We get fair use. But you get streaming royalties. You get things, too. This is an end run around this in which these artists are saying, we're going to go to the court and give us the part we want. We're going to take away that bargaining chip, and then we don't have to give you anything. We got what we want through the courts. No trials either. No messy hearings, no studies, no nothing. Just a judge says, yeah, give it to them. These cases are underway to the great surprise of many attorneys, including, I think, some that are on the Copyright Committee. The first couple of judges have agreed to this at the district, at the local level. So now it's working its way up on appeal. And we've been asked if ARSC would be, by the attorneys involved in this, defending this, if ARSC would be interested in submitting a friend of the court brief on our position. We're not party to the suit, of course, but advising the court on our position on how damaging that would be to the public interest and to our interest if this one piece is pulled out and then there's no longer any incentive for settlement on the larger question. And we've agreed to do that. And Eric Harbison, is Eric here? He left. Okay. Well, hopefully he left in order to continue work on the brief, which he is drafting. He probably doesn't want to see me buttonhole him again, which he is drafting. The committee will look at it. It will eventually go to the board and be submitted, making our case to the judge to at least take into consideration the collateral damage that could come for a favorable ruling on this one little piece for the artists. So working on that. Some of you may have heard of the YouTube takedown issue. ARSC is now, the New York chapter, I should say, has video recorded five of the presentations, two hour presentations that were given in New York. And those have been posted to the internet on a YouTube channel, an ARSC YouTube channel. I encourage you to go take a look at them if you haven't already. One of those, which was a presentation by Vince Giordano on the music in the television show Boardwalk Empire, was challenged by a number of rights holders saying that their music, their copyrighted music, was played in this and therefore they wanted it taken down. And it was. That's what YouTube has to do when they get a challenge by a copyright holder. Now, we went back and studied this issue because this is the first time this has happened. Remember, we only have five of these up so far. And we felt, the Copyright Committee felt this was clearly within fair use. It was for commentary and review. These were only excerpts, a minute, 50 seconds, a minute and 20 seconds or something. Often the speaker was talking over them to make musical points, the points about the music you're listening to. So it was clearly a lecture, an educational lecture, which served no danger to the copyright holder. So we then submitted a dispute of that takedown. The copyright holders have 30 days to respond to the dispute and either challenge it and say no, they still want it taken down, or to release the music, or to simply say nothing, in which case it's released. And then YouTube makes the decision, the ultimate decision. And in this case, YouTube decided we were right, it was fair use, and they put it back up. So that was successful, that was a good experience. They only put it back up in the United States, however. It's still blocked in the rest of the world. And two others of the five are blocked in Germany only for some mysterious reason. So we have our work cut out. And ARSC, by the way, has about 100 members in other countries than the US, a little more than that. And they should be able to watch these as well. So we are now looking into how to challenge that, or if we can challenge that in Germany and other countries as well. So there's that. There's more I can say about that, but that's basically that issue. Finally, We have members in Canada, of course. There has been a sneak attack in Canada by the government on terms for copyright. They put in an appropriations bill under a section about monuments, something nothing to do with intellectual property, an extension from 50 to 70 year protection for sound recordings in Canada, and said nothing about it. Again, no hearings, nothing. And of course, it's become known now, and some of our Canadian members are rather upset about it, as you might imagine, and we've encouraged them, since this really has to be handled by Canadians with their government, to get in touch with each other. Nathan, I believe, sent a list of contact information to Barry Ashbull and some other Canadians so they could actually get in contact with each other and write letters, contact their members of parliament and so forth. And ARSC has offered, if they wish, if the Canadian contingent wishes, to make a statement on their behalf. Obviously, we're international, so we're certainly willing to support that as well. If we can stir up some trouble for the Canadian copyright maximalists, all the better. So those are the major things that are on the agenda right now. And before Sam gets up, if it's all right with him, if there are any questions about what we're doing or what the prospects are, something about copyright, please. Yes.
Were the ones that challenged our the copyright, were they legitimate challengers like Universal, or were these that crazy Australian company that is also claiming copyrights on bird songs?
No, as far as we can tell, YouTube gives you a certain amount of information on who's complaining, what exactly they're complaining about. Some of them are from, in the case of the Vince Giordano, there were 18 excerpts out of the 40 that were challenged. They were challenged by Sony Music, by UMG, Universal Music Group, and by a number of intermediary companies who represent them, such as AdRev, for example, which is a company that looks for opportunities to take material that's copyrighted by Sony and attach it to advertising with some of the money going back to Sony. And there's something called The Orchard, which is another company that is an intermediary representing Sony and UMG and other actual holders. So some of these were intermediaries, some of them were actually Sony itself and UMG itself. As far as we can tell, they're all legitimate. They do in fact hold the rights. But this was a fair use case. As far as we can tell, all of the challenges were automated challenges. They weren't somebody looking and saying, aha, I found something. They have sniffer programs that go around and do an audio match. And when they find it, they automatically send out a challenge without any human intervention. So sometimes when you challenge that, they go back and actually look at it and say, oh, so that's, yes. It is very possible. This is almost a random process in some ways. One of the things challenged by Sony was a 1923 OK by Sophie Tucker of Old King Tut. I don't know if any of you have a copy of it. Vince played about a minute of it, I guess, a minute and 10 seconds. The whole record is elsewhere on YouTube by a collector, and that's not been challenged. But our minute was challenged in the middle of a lecture by somebody, you know, using it for commentary. So, you know, it makes no sense at all. So quite possibly if you put it somewhere else, and YouTube is a special target of the rights holders, of course. They hate YouTube, they'd like it to go away. So yes, if you put it somewhere else, it might well escape their notice. Anything else? Yes, sir.
There are a great many collectors, particularly in the OTR world, who have a very bad misunderstanding of historical recordings, whether they are or aren't in the public domain. What is a distilled, maybe 3-point explanation we could give when asked, is this recording in the public domain?
Okay, that's an easy one to answer, actually. In the United States, no recordings are public domain. There are some for whom, some that are abandoned, the companies are gone, there's nobody to defend them, they're what's called orphan works. There's some that are kind of questionable and are generally assumed to be free to use, like the Edison recordings, for example. But technically, because it's state law for these older recordings, nothing has yet fallen into the public domain, and nothing will until currently 2067, if we all live that long and they don't extend it, and blah, blah, blah. Right now, none.
That's what I thought.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much. Sam is going to talk to you about the national. One last thing I should say, because this could be important to future presenters. Where ARSC is planning to put more videos up. That's one of the reasons we fought this through, to see, you know, how the system works, including presentations with the permission, of course, from speakers here at this conference. In the future, Leah and Mike are recording some for that purpose. In order to make sure that we're doing it right and you're doing it right, an ARSC committee has put together video guidelines, which will be published in the next few months, to make sure that the excerpts you use are used properly and that we've got some defensible way that ARSC is advising its speakers to construct their speak if they're going to use copyrighted materials. So there will be some guidelines coming out for you to use. Pretty sensible guidelines, I think, on making sure that your use is fair use as well. Sam.